to the Lean on Agile show. I'm your host, Shaheen. I know Joy. First of all, thanks, Joy, for joining us. Our guest speaker tonight, or graciously accept to join us, is Joy. I know him from the Kanban community. He was my mentor for becoming an AKT, and I really learned from him. So, and I'm very privileged to have you here to talk with us. Yeah, but I didn't do the justice introducing you. So, Joy, tell us who Joy is.
Okay. Well, I'm thank you, Shaheen, by the way. I'm, like you kind of said, I've had quite a few years of working in the Kanban method. I got started in Kanban before it was called Kanban, basically. I was following a thread of thinking and learning from a number of people, which tied back to this sort of lean agile management approach, which was kind of building up steam back in the early 2000s. And my whole focus on it was actually the economics, because I always ran into the problem of, hey, do all this real big stuff and you're going to get five people at best to do it. And some of them will be part-time. You'll be okay. That was kind of the consistent message I got early in my career. And I was always like, well, how do I make that work? And how do we balance this out? And I knew traditional project management wasn't going to work for me given those crazy constraints. So I kept hunting for an economic balance of trying to figure out how do we get the best of both worlds, where we keep things moving along and we're not overwhelmed and kind of just stuck in a lot of places. Because growing up before my career as a professional, I worked on a number of projects as a part-time student, and I could just see them catching on fire, you know, year after year. And I was like, wow, there's a pattern here. Let me see if I can challenge that pattern with some good tools. And so early in my career, I'm just a big reader. I have books galore here in this room. And I stumbled across a book called Agile Management by David Anderson. And that's kind of how I started following the path of the Sling Agile Management Group. And really, it was really fascinating to see how they evolved over time into what is today the Kanban method. So I've gone from being sort of a follower to now vice president for community development and product management for Kanban University. So I help mentor people in the community. I help develop the community. And I also help basically products get to market over time and better over time as well. So thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to talking with people. By the way, he wasn't lying. I've actually worked for years in Kanban. So I've done work in the federal government, financial institutions, major insurance companies, global insurance companies, fairly large regional banks, and yeah, higher education as well, and a nonprofit.
What did you find in Kanban that you couldn't find in something else? So why Kanban? That's my question. Like, you started before it was called Kanban. Like, wait, but why that philosophy or that kind of thinking? What attracts you to that? Or what did you find in that you didn't find anywhere else?
You know, this is going to sound really weird, but my initial career focus was biochemistry when I went to college. And halfway through that, it just didn't work out for me for a number of reasons, life circumstances. I was like, well, that's not going to happen. I'm going to go the path of decision information sciences. And so I started going down that path, and that didn't work out. And I ended up in a business degree, and I walked out with a business degree from college. And during that process of going to that business program, they taught you a lot about managerial economics, managerial accounting. And they were really trying to hammer into your head, think critically about the dollars being spent and the time being spent. And so that was always kind of in the back of my head when I looked at these things. Now, that Agile Management book from David was kind of the starting point for me to go, wait a minute, there's a way to kind of take what I've learned in accounting and traditional business and map it over into this way of working, really these different ways of working. So that Agile Management book critiques feature-driven development, it critiques Scrum, it critiques, domain-driven design, maybe. And then theory of constraints. And it was all done primarily with theory of constraints lens on it, but it put economics at the forefront of looking at transaction costs and coordination costs. So how long does it take for us to coordinate and have a meeting? What's efficient there? And then what's the transaction cost? If we need to do some things, how long does it take us to actually build software, for example? Right. So it kind of began that conversation that caught my attention of, holy cow, this is making sense from a dollar and time kind of perspective. And that grew me into a place where I started looking at all the options. And that's where I started looking at Scrum and started looking at Kanban. And keep in mind, I've used Scrum in a number of places. I've used it in nonprofits. I've used it in the federal government before with great success. So I'm not an antagonist of this thing. It's more about the right tool for the right place at the right time. And what kind of got me into Kanban more and more over time was the idea of a method versus a framework. So a method is kind of a grab bag of tools, things that you might want to use. Like I was just organizing my shed a few moments ago, and there's a lot of tools in there. Some of them I use regularly, some I haven't used since 1997, I believe, if I looked at it right. So there are tools there that you might use sometimes. There are tools that you're going to use frequently. That's the idea behind a method. And I've always liked that a lot. And I like that because with what we've been doing with Kanban, it's a little bit more humane. It's a little bit more thoughtful to what the team needs or the organization needs to be able to be stable, to kind of survive in the long run. Whereas other approaches, they're not bad, but they tend to miss out on some of those things. Like a framework tends to say, you should probably do this A to Z. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean the framework creators think this way, by the way. They're very smart people. But what I keep finding is people who read those frameworks thinks, well, this is how you bake the cake. You got to do step 1 through 10. No, you don't. But a lot of people in the framework world kind of get stuck in that rut of continuously following a script and not really thinking critically. And I find that the method says, well, here, try these tools. And sometimes they just don't work. And to go, well, why not? And suddenly to think critically about the environment you're in and use another tool possibly to inspect and kind of learn and adapt to what's going on in your environment.
Yeah, I can easily relate to the framework aspect that you were talking about. And I saw lots of conversation or discussion around, let's go back to this Bible or to this place that everyone agrees and see what that framework says, yeah, instead of thinking about what the rationale was behind that made it say that way or made it write it that way, right? So I remember reading an article about why, for example, I'm just picking on Scrum because that article was about Scrum. Why did we have events such in a Scrum that is right now, like a sprint planning, a retrospective, like a sprint review and all that? And it was a case study. In that situation, they looked at the calendar of the people, that team that wanted to get rid of the meetings, and they repurposed those meetings into different meetings, and they called them those meetings, and they stayed on like that. So, but nowadays, if you look at it as a framework, you're just going to, as you said, like a cookbook, look at it and say, you need to do this, do that, do that. You won't think behind that.
You know, and Shaheen, for people who are listening in here, I have a question for you to think about, and you can answer it later on as we start talking. But why would a company want to use a framework over a method? So a method is kind of a grab bag, make your own recipe kind of thing. A framework is, here's the recipe. Theoretically, that's what gets communicated to management at corporations. So why do you think they would want to jump for a framework first before jumping to a method? That's, you know, food for thought.
I think from my opinion, what I feel is framework, because these are the business people who actually implement, they want some security or some kind of confidence rather than experimenting with different methods that might go wrong, and that creates maybe uncertainties. Or, as you know, you said already about economics, how to utilize your money and resources so that you are always in a good shape to maximize it and present it to the board or the stakeholders so they are happy. I guess that might be the reason. One of the thoughts, I might not be true as well.
I like to jump in. I think Asim's right on this. I felt like where I work, I feel that they use a framework as kind of a reassurance or a guarantee versus an experimental type scenario, because again, these are big corporations that invest a lot of money. And I feel that they don't want to take that chance because there's so much invested. So they want to have some sort of established method that, or some sort of, as you said, like a framework that they can fall on. And it kind of has the check marks that they are looking for so that, you know, there's no risk. That's how I felt. Like I've worked in two different departments. Again, I've worked with Shaheen, and I think he kind of knows, he either saw that when he was working with our departments as well. But that's how I kind of feel about, like, when you say framework versus a method.
Yeah, and if I add to what everyone's talking about framework versus method, I think framework needs less thinking and method needs more thinking. So framework is like a recipe that they give you, and yeah, you do this, you would be successful. Mm-hmm. But a method, okay, so which tool I use in which part of the work, when to use, how much to use that. So it's easier to rely on a framework, let me put it that way. I don't want to say people don't want to think, but that's it, make it much easier. Like, these are the steps, follow those frameworks, and you will be successful. Everyone else has been successful doing that.
Right. Yeah, those are some good answers. I'll look for some more later on, but those are some good answers. I'll follow up on this topic in a moment. Yeah.
Joy, you said that recently you are a VP of product and community for Kanban University. So tell us more about the world of product and Kanban. So what's going on? I guess that's the least, at least from my perspective or the people that I work with, I don't see that much expansion into the product world. I might be wrong because we already have a sign for that. We have a VP of product for it. So I'm sure I'm wrong. So tell us more about how Kanban can help in the product world.
Okay, so I want to cover a lot with that question. That's a great question. So to explain a couple of things here, the Kanban method got its origins primarily in service orientation and service delivery. It moved into product development, product management over time, and it can be used pretty much for either one of those or both of those. It just depends on what you're trying to do as an organization or as a line of service within your organization. So building products can happen very easily, just as well as delivering services for, like, you name it, like getting a COVID shot could be one example, or scheduling a COVID shot online, or running the software for scheduling the COVID shot. So it ranges quite a bit there. But I think it's worth mentioning that when I say product management, I'm talking about products that Kanban University offers. And those are the Kanban Management Professional Training Set, the Team Kanban Practitioner Training Materials, the games simulations that we put out on as part of the Kanban University. So I'm taking care of those eggs, so to speak, as a product manager. But in light of that, we typically work a lot with David Anderson, and David has his own consulting business that runs separate from Kanban University. And they do what I call a little bit of research and development, and they build out new products from time to time. And so they have one that they're piloting right now called Kanban,
Innovation something, right?
Yeah, design innovation, I believe. Yeah. So that one in particular kind of starts to look at things like product development and product management, but more development, I would say, than management from what I've heard so far. But we do have, without that even in the picture, I know a number of people who work at financial organizations that run portfolios as product managers, and they support product management using a visualization of a Kanban board. Now, what happens below that portfolio really is up, you know, if it's a healthy organization, they should say, teams, you choose the tools you want to use and go for it. And that's where typically you would see teams using Scrum, XP, DAD, Kanban itself. You know, it depends on what's right for them and what they feel like gives them focus and a good discipline to learn and kind of evolve over time. So in the Kanban management world of product management, you would find something like, if you guys Google it, you'd find Kanban and Optimizely. You'd find a good case study out there and how Optimizely actually did what's called the double diamond, which is you go out there and you do research and try to say, is this the right problem to solve? So we were talking earlier about framework versus method. And what kind of comes back to home to me every time I hear people say, well, we got to do a framework, is because they, not that they're hesitant, but they're not confident with how to play with risk. And you have to have a little confidence to play with risk over time. And as you do, you realize how to formulate some level of risk and what risk to take versus not take. Sadly, a lot of budgeting and organizations say, we're going to put all the risk on this one bet. And it's like, are you kidding me? But it happens commonly. We're going to buy into this framework and go out here and do this gigantic 2 to 5 year program thing to roll out this whole new modern agile way of working. And I'm like, my God, you're missing out on the feedback loop so far away, like a real feedback loop. So we tend to recommend paring it down quite a bit, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, and really try to get a little bit of feedback initially in a pilot program or something like that to say, does this really work for us? And the same thing goes for product development. You don't say, we're going to build a whole damn product and then test it and see if customers like it after we spent, you know, $5-10 million easily into the product. So what we recommend, and this is what the Double Diamond typically does, and this is what Optimizely did, they built, you know, the initial beginning of a platform, and then they started sending out tests to say, okay, let's try this. Let's see if this works with our customer base. Would it really match their needs? And then they would roll it into production. And then they would come back and validate, was their hypothesis correct? So, you know, probably $1-2 million is getting spent on a bet, but the research is probably, I don't know the numbers, I'm guessing here, probably 20% is going into research at least before they say, we think this is the right fit, or we need to go back and run some more tests, some more analysis to then say, okay, now we have the right understanding of what the fit is. And now we'll go out there and deliver that product. And that typically is broken up in two different ways. That's broken up with what's called an upstream Kanban system, where you really kind of explore and you anticipate some things just basically blowing up and not working out right. And then you go through a delivery system where it's like, we've made a bet, now let's get it into production or get it somewhere in the customer's eyes so we can get that full feedback loop coming back to us where the customer says, I like it. That's the hard part to do. This is not easy stuff, by the way. So that's kind of the short answer to product management. The two books to recommend for those who are listening is the Upstream Kanban by Patrick Stayer, and also the Kanban Essentials Guide, which is pretty good, but there's also now a Kanban guide that's illustrated. I'm sure Shaheen has it. He can share it with you as well. That's a good little reference book to go through about how Kanban works from a delivery perspective.
And on the community side, so what's happening on the community side of Canva?
A lot. So, and I should mention product-wise, that ties back to community to some degree, because we're kind of growing our community over time. For the past, well, since 2011, for the past 10 years, we've been growing a community of what are called Kanban management professionals and team Kanban practitioners. And we've always had a little budding community of what we call accredited Kanban consultants. And right alongside of them are people like you, Shaheen, who are accredited Kanban trainers. And so we have people out there kind of building up the community, building up awareness, which is superb and awesome. And then we have this next little addition of people who are really the coaches. And so we have this new thing called the Kanban coaching professional credential. And that is composed of people who understand how to use what's called the Kanban maturity model and coaching practices. Now, for me, it answers a lot of questions about how, as a community, we should be engaging executives and leaders and fellow coaches when it comes to using the Kanban method without being prescriptive, without being literal, but at the same time, kind of putting some pressure on growing up, how people manage their work without being exactly literal, like a checkbox kind of literal framework approach. And so from the community side of things, beyond that, we now are starting to develop this new community of coaching professionals, which are really exciting to me because I think they have a lot of potential in the world, basically, to help improve how Kanban gets used inside organizations. And then I would say from a community perspective, we're a little sad because we haven't had a conference in over a good year now. And we'll have to wait until next year to have our next conference, quite likely. But that will be in sunny San Diego, and I can't wait to do it. So if you've been kind of into Kanban, but you kind of want to get a good deep dive into it for a couple of days, we have an annual conference that's just fabulous. And we're even tinkering with the idea of maybe doing some online things internally within our Kanban University community, just to kind of keep some knowledge moving across the world, basically. So, you know, in the community space, I'd say that's where we are right now. We're trying to help grow some coaches out in the world. We definitely have some consultants who are experts at what they do, and they're great to talk to, friendly, accessible. If you have a Kanban question, just reach out to one of them. They would be elated to talk with you.
We had in our previous Kanban killing session, we had one of them, Schumann from Toronto, and we were talking about a stealth Kanban. When kind of you mentioned it, like without telling them how to introduce Kanban, and so we have good community in Toronto. I can tell you about, and we are growing very fast, so it's good.
Yeah, and something to mention with Schumann's technique of stealth Kanban, it's not uncommon, by the way, to go into a group that's saying we got to do Scrum because we've been told we're not doing things right or not disciplined enough. And I did that within the federal space. They said, we love Scrum. I said, great, let's do it. And we did it, and they could stomach about half of what the framework could offer. And unlike a robot, I said, wait a minute, let's just use half of it and make that work for us. And so we did about 13 sprints of what would be called probably Scrum but if you use one person's perspective or just you know, partial Scrum. And then after we got really good with it, I said, hey guys, how about we throw away the estimation? How about we throw away story pointing and we just start using the data from our Kanban system that I've had running the entire time.
Right.
And they didn't realize that you could do that. And I said, yeah, we pretty much have safe bets now. And even the manager didn't believe me when I said, let's do this. And it wasn't until I told him, no, you can't buy off this big chunk of a project. It'll take three times longer. When he said, no, we can do it in a month. And I said, no, you will take 3 months. Right. And then like 3 months later, everyone's going, hey, we did it. We finished. I said, great. Remember that forecast I gave you? We're off by 3 days. So that's an example of where you start to grow up and you use some of the maturity model, actually, the practices in the maturity model right. to demonstrate how stable you are. So it's right. really fun.
Right. So that brings me to my next questions. And that was a good example of how to start with Kanban. You start from, probably you start from where they were, right? So yeah. said, let's do that, right? So what are the other ways or other suggestions that you have? If someone wants to start with Kanban, how they can do that? In their organization, what are the things that they need to consider?
I would say, so this sounds kind of weird, but I've really developed this belief for some time now of, we used to say visualize, but I think start with what you do now is super critical. So rather than saying, hey, you need to visualize what you got going on, well, what are you doing today? And then can we measure it like a system? So kind of like that circle behind you there in your background, Shane, where it's got all those beautiful colors, you could say that's a system. It's a closed system to some degree. So there's a place where stuff's going in and a place where stuff is going out. And I think if people start to look at it like that and say, well, whatever you're doing, there's a place where things are going in and a place where things are going out. And there could be more ins and outs, but we need to kind of start to measure that. And if we can figure out how much is going in and how much is going out, we can start to determine if this is a balanced system, right? If things are balancing out where there's a certain number of inputs going in mm-hmm. per week, certain number of outputs coming out per week, then we have what's called a balanced system. And somewhere in there is a hidden WIP limit, a hidden limit that they're using to keep track of things, to not overload themselves. But if they're really complaining about chaos, there's a good chance there's more input, less output, which means they're overcommitting. They're starting before finishing, that kind of problem. So I tend to tell people before you visualize, try and figure out what the numbers look like if you can. If you can't, which is what typically leads to visualization, you probably need to put it up on a board. And what I have been researching, and I don't have a good answer for yet, I haven't really delved into it too much, is what level of visualization is healthy. Now, you know this from your training, Shaheen, where we talk about how there's a certain level of granularity where it's just not valuable to the customer. So it's really important to have the customer's things up there and say what the customer wants. But initially, there's this sort of potentially challenging, almost anti-pattern where everyone wants to track everything. And it's like overload. So there's that behavior, which I caution people about. And there's also a behavior of leadership playing into this quotient. And I'm still learning this one, which is you have good leadership who says, yeah, let's do this. I want to be involved. I want to help you out. And that's like a door opening up for safety, which is great. And the flip side of that is I want to see everything you're working on. And that's all you hear. And you kind of go, ooh, right? And so people tend to hide a little bit more because of that behavior. So there's definitely a leadership component that ties into this. And a good coach, by the way, can help kind of nudge that leader in the right direction to be a little bit less critical in their language, even if they don't know it. They may be well-intended, but the way they word things can definitely come off of like, oh, well, there's a spotlight on us. You know, like the eye of Sauron is looking at us right now.
Right. In situations that you're a team member and you don't have a coach there, and you learn about Kanban and you want to do something mm-hmm. about it, and this you have this leader and breathing down on your neck, right? That's get this one done, right? Or like a very control free kind of a leader that you have. Is there anything that you can do in those situations?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I would say that if I have a control freak for someone I'm working with and I'm not the coach, there is something I would recommend, which is to put them in the driver's seat a little bit, politely, gently, mm-hmm. where if they really want to be involved in the mess of things, you would actually have them drive some of the conversations a little bit mm-hmm. to some degree. And then there's also, so if you're observing this, you're coaching it to some degree, right? I hate to say that, even if you're not called to coach. I was a technical team lead in one of my jobs where I was effectively coaching. I was definitely coaching a lot. And if you're not in that coaching title, you can still do some coaching for sure. And that is, let the person drive a little bit and then take them away from the board, take them away from the team and debrief with them, talk with them, say, how did you think that worked out for you? What were your interpretations of things? What did you read from the group that you were talking to? So help them develop their emotional quotient to some degree of how their engagement plays into this and how their gravity of their position might play into it as well. And usually what I find is 9 times out of 10, if I take someone for a walk, believe it or not, back pre-COVID, if I actually took them out of the building and went for a walk and said, hey, so how did that work out for you? Because they have to walk, they have to breathe. Because they breathe, they think a little bit better than if they sit in a chair and kind of get tight and talk about what they think happened. So that's one technique that I find to be really powerful. And even today in virtual land, if I had to do this again, I would get them on the phone and say, let's go out for a walk and just conference call while we're walking. And let's just make sure we're both walking and talking. And that's a great way to kind of debrief and reflect on how to improve without putting it into a box and being really critical, because this is a sense and respond human behavior problem.
Right.
It's not, let's crunch the numbers and figure out a better way to tell people to work harder.
And we all have good intentions, right? So if that person is telling me or as a team member to do things, these things, he had good intentions. That's what we need to keep telling ourselves. He's not doing it just to put me in a misery, right? And I like the idea. You can we are in lockdown these days, but when things get better, you can even drive to their house and then for lunch when they have a lunch break or like a break for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, socially distance walk and talk to each other, right? So that's gonna it brought me I didn't know this, but when I was a team lead as a developer, the one-on-one with my manager, I hated cubicles, so I always did the walk with him, and that was one of my best times as he was leading me. So it was like giving me all the opportunities that I wanted. So maybe the walk was a trick. Now that I'm rethinking back of it. So are there any horror stories of Kanban or the transformation that you can tell us about?
My first time doing it was a learning curve. So I read the Blue Book, which is this blue book called Kanban by David, because I'd been following along with his development of this thing. And I thought, wow, this is really fascinating. And a lot of it just clicked with me as far as how to manage people and really solve the problem of good, respectful, humane management of people, focusing on the work. All those things really clicked with me. And so I read the book at a job where I was a manager of a small IT department for software development. And I thought, let's do this. And so I put it up on the board. I created a Kanban board. I didn't use static. I just said, let's just do this. I think I know what the answer is here. Let's just build out this Kanban board like this. And I'm going to create swim lanes for each team member, and they're going to keep track of their work. And we're just going to go with that. And I noticed that our daily stand-up meetings, it was just kind of like, they're here, but they're not here. They're tracking their work, but it's kind of weird. Some of them are doing like 5 things and some of them are doing like 100 things. And I did that for about 2 years. And as I was leaving that job, they had a nice going away lunch thing for me. And they said, hey, do we have to keep this board up? I said, no, it's up to you. And this is always a test for you as a manager. The thing you leave behind, the way of working you leave behind, do they really own it? Do they take it and run with it? Or is it just like, oh, you're here and we're doing it to please you? And sure enough, when I said, no, you don't have to, but I hope you keep it up. Within about 10 minutes after me saying that, they had erased the whole board and taken everything down. They put a big smiley face up on the board. And so I learned a lesson there about introducing Kanban, right? I had implemented Kanban and I learned my lesson. I'd never again said, let me implement this and tell you how to manage your work. It was more of, let me discover how you do your work and let's agree on a common understanding of what that work looks like across the team or across the organization. And then let's try and figure out how to visualize it relative to actually how you do your work. So there's process engineering, which can in very many cases be implementing processes. And then there's system thinking and introducing systems thinking to people, which is effectively saying, you have this stuff all around you and this is kind of how you work. And so let's see what we can do to now improve that. So that was my big, you know, audacious failure, because everyone, the team just walked away from it. However, when I left the Department of Labor, they were still doing it. And when I left a nonprofit, I believe they kept it up, but they had some organizational changes they went through shortly after I left. So I don't know if they really stuck with it. But that to me is the ultimate test of you as a coach, is if what you created kind of sticks around with the culture and they still think of it as valuable.
Yeah, that's a very good way to look at it. Because if you help them, they take it in, they're going to internalize it. Maybe they even improve it, right? But if they completely not using it, right, then it means that it didn't work for them, right? So
you weren't paying attention. That's what I would say, ultimately, right?
Yeah. And you don't have to be in the management role or like without having an influence, you can make some suggestions. And if it sticks, right, it's going to work for them. Yeah. It was a good lessons learned for you from that failure.
Yeah.
Would you suggest other people to fail when you work with them?
I would suggest to expect a reflection to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an interesting challenge to look at. But I think oftentimes we forget to take care of things that really matter. And so we pay attention to things that are easy to take care of versus things that are hard to take care of. And in light of that, we tend to neglect some things that really do need to be paid attention to. And it's only through failure do we kind of learn, here's a repeated failure. Here's a problem that I can keep missing. Can I fix that blind spot? Can I not? So I fully anticipate that anyone who does Kanban is going to run into problems from time to time. They're going to find problems they can't solve. They're going to see problems recur with the groups that actually use the Kanban system. That's okay. That's something to solve over time. But I think there has to be a healthy tolerance of, hey, let's try something and see what works. And that's, again, where I think Asim and Damon both were talking about this idea of hey, let's do a framework because it's lower risk. And I think what has to happen a lot of times, you have to teach people to take smaller risks and try small things out and see what happens. So you don't have to build a Kanban system from soup to nuts in a 2-day thing. I've seen AKCs do that in a day or two. But they're doing it because they actually have executive level sponsorship that says we're going to do it this way, mm-hmm. which sometimes lasts and sometimes doesn't, right? But mm-hmm. then on the flip side, if you say to teams, let's start to kind of pull apart what you're doing, just visualize it. And if you're comfortable with that, let's see if we can visualize what the customer wants, not what happens underneath that. So there's kind of like a business in the front, party in the back kind of analogy to the Kanban system. That's a good way to get started and to acknowledge that, hey, we're probably going to try some things building this out or changing it that's going to blow up, and that's okay. We as long as everyone agrees to that, we're going to have small problems here and there. We're going to work on it and go from there.
I agree to pursue change. That's one of the...
Yeah. Evolutionary change in particular.
Evolutionary change, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Which is kind of like when you were a high school kid, right? You go down the road and be like, oh, that's a dead end. I better turn around and get out of here because it's looking kind of sketchy, and then go down a different road, but the lights are better. So, you know, that's kind of the evolutionary pathway sometimes.
So what's something exciting that you can share with us from Kanban University that is not public yet, or you know that's something going to happen that is going to happen soon?
So gosh, there's quite a bit in the delivery system that we track. And I live it and breathe it every day right now.
Right.
I would say that the one thing I'm excited about coming out at some point is a 2-page flyer that hopefully speaks to executives and leaders about mm-hmm. what the Kanban method is and how it can help them, as well as to just regular folk, but primarily to managers and people who have big dollars on the line. They have to say, well, how do I solve some of the problems I keep seeing show up over and over again? So I can't say more than that, but it'll be exciting. We're currently beta testing. It went into prototype today. So it actually went out to a handful of trusted colleagues to get their feedback from the commercial areas. So they can tell us, yeah, my boss will actually read that and listen to it. Because my job right now is to try and get Kanban into the hands of people who really think critically from an executive or VP kind of level. And they go, yeah, that's my problem. And I think this could help us, right? I don't want to say, here's the recipe. I never want to do that. But I want to say, here are the ingredients that could really help improve what you're doing.
Kanban University came up with the official guide, which was, I believe, 11 pager, which was a really nice Kanban guide for the people that want to just start reading. And it was very visualized. So it was, practice what you preach, visualize, right? So, and I really enjoyed the Autobahn. Looking forward for more coming from the Kanban community and Kanban University. So One question for you. You've been teaching Kanban for a long time. What are your recommendations for people that want to learn Kanban? Obviously, the Kanban University courses are there, but you mentioned some of the books, Kanban Blue Book, Agile Management Book. Is there any other way that you suggest them to learn on their own or explore on their own?
Yeah. I would say that just fair warning, those two books, especially the Agile Management Book, that's a textbook practically. The Blue Book is not a textbook, but it is definitely a log of what happened and a thoughtful reflection on what was accomplished. I don't know if I'd recommend the Agile Management Book unless you're into management theory and economics and you really like that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to geek out there. But if you're just trying to get your hands dirty, some of the guides we have online, like Essential Kanban Condensed Guide, which is free, and the Upstream Kanban, which is also free. Those are two good starting points to just kind of get your head wrapped around what Kanban is to begin with. And that would assume that you probably read that Essential Kanban, the official guide to Kanban method, right? That is probably a good starting point. And what's funny about that guide is that we've been playing with it for 2 years. We just finally said, oh, let's release this. But we did it at a what's called a Kanban leadership retreat, which anyone's welcome to go to, by the way. So back to San Diego in May of next year, I'm looking forward to it. We'll have that conference, but we'll also have a leadership retreat where anyone's welcome to join in and say, hey, I'd like to challenge this part of the method, or I'd like to recommend this addition or something else. We're always open ears in that way. And someone had back in Europe, back about 2 years ago, I believe, had put together this idea of the guide. And we had just been holding it in our backlog until recently. And we said, let's get this thing done. But yeah, it's very visual, very easy to kind of comprehend what Kanban is. I'd say at that point, after reading the guide, you could probably start to play around with Kanban if you wanted to and visualize something and see what happens, either on a personal level or a family level or even a company level if you wanted to do that. But after that, you probably want to start to dig into the Essentials Kanban Condensed Guide. I know a number of people who work in global organizations who find that guide after I've worked with them a little while. They go, oh my God, why didn't you tell me about this? And I'm like, well, we've been talking to you, but when they read that book, it has a number of ahas in there for them where they go, I didn't realize it was all this. So oftentimes what I find is that people need to give it a try and go out there and research what the books are available. In fact, we have a website now called kanbanbooks.com, I believe. And I believe that actually has a number of books that you can buy online right there, pointing in the right direction. But there are also some other great authors out there that I'd be ashamed not to mention. One would be Mike Burrows is in our community. He has a really great way of bringing up the idea of changing and how you set the stage for changing. It's called Agenda Shift. It's really beautiful. And then we also have Klaus Leopold is in our community. He's a great guy. And he's actually written a number of books on Kanban and how to think about managing with Kanban, especially different ways of kind of layering Kanban inside an organization. So those are two good authors that I can think of. Another one, which is really exciting. So if you're on the product management end and you're trying to figure out, are we building the right product, or in particular, if we're on the service side, we're trying to build the right service. There's a guy named, you know him, Shaheen, Alexei Zegloff. He and David both co-authored a book called Fit for Purpose. And I still think of that as a developing area of knowledge for our space, but definitely a fun read for how to think about how do we connect in that delivery piece. Are we delivering the right things for the customer, kind of driving that need to change your Kanban system? So those are a handful of books that I would say are really good to get started with. Yeah, that's probably the beginning story. I could go through a laundry list, but I don't think we want to do that right now.
Yeah, there are plenty of good. Yeah, and I read all of those three books that you said. All of them are really good. Yeah. And so you mentioned on KLR's Kanban leadership retreats, right? Tell us a little bit more, because I heard about it, and then I heard more about it. I really was sold on the Kanban community, as you said. Like, if you have an idea, you bring it there. Like, it doesn't matter if you are David Anderson, if you are like some person that is just joining the conference, you have an idea. And tell us more about that. Like, what, how does that work? Because I haven't been part of them in person. We tried that in one of the meetups virtually. It worked a little bit good. But yeah, tell us how the experience is.
Yeah, so to give you an idea of what the week is like, so it's actually a week put together. The first 2.5 or 3 days really is the actual conference format. And we typically go through a bunch of formal presentations, lots of workshops where you learn different techniques and tools from forecasting to different simulations about how to use the Kanban method. It really is a fun 3 days. And then we switch gears into that KLR format. And that really is kick off your shoes, bring your shorts, wear tank top kind of conversation. You're meant to relax. It's an open space conversation. You bring your ideas to the table and then people vote on it using an open space kind of format. And so we tend to have tracks in that open space arena that focus on various areas that people are suggesting. We kind of find that grouping happening, that clustering happening once we get those ideas out there on the table. So it's a free for all, put your thoughts out there about what you want to talk about for the next 2 days. And so we tend to then go into morning sessions pretty much every day after that for the next 2 days. And we also have evening sessions starting that day and then for the next 2 days. So there's an afternoon break to kind of get out there and let your brain relax. And just typically we have these retreats and nice venues where you can go out and do things. But by the morning or especially by the evening, people's brains are really primed to kind of dig into the material. And so we then kind of dive into those various topics and really hash them out and discuss, you know, what's the benefit, what's the merit, what's the value? Is there something here that we want to consider down the road? Or just sometimes people just share stuff, right? They just say, hey, this is what I'm working on. And we go, that's really cool. Keep doing it, right? So that's kind of the nature of it. It's a really great way to be exposed to a lot of different deep thinking. And you often leave with a laundry list of things that you probably will want to learn more about.
Right. Yeah, I'm very looking forward to San Diego.
Yeah.
Hopefully next year.
Yeah.
As yourself. Damon, Asim, if you have any specific questions from Joy or myself.
I guess one of my questions is, I'm looking at it from just overall agile perspective. Our corporation my company uses Scrum a lot. I think I'm one of a few teams throughout the corporation that uses Kanban. And even when we're using Kanban, it's still kind of like a hybrid because we don't have the flexibility to deploy whenever. We have a fixed date that we always have to deploy on. So we operate kind of in a Scrum Kanban hybrid. And what I generally tell people is just that it's just the way we deliver is more, it's more suited for Kanban just because when we try to start refactoring, it's a chaotic mess because we pull stories in, we eject stories out very frequently within 2 weeks. So building a consistent velocity was always an issue when I was doing this for the first year as a Scrum Master for a team. So yeah. I just jettisoned that idea, no more story points, because then when you can't build a consistent velocity, all our releases end up having these random kind of velocity and burn down charts. So I just said, forget, let's just focus on delivering the stories from beginning to end just because of that refactoring. But going back to the question, like, from my point of view, like, is it just that Kanban is just not as well known versus Scrum? Because like all of our teams is Scrum. A lot of the times when they're advertising for stuff, it's like they're looking for a Scrum Master. Most of my background, because I started off as Scrum as a member and then as a Scrum Master, and then I kind of moved into Kanban because it made sense. But now, you know, just kind of looking back, it's like, okay, well, the company still wants Scrum in a lot of situations. And I guess for project purposes, yeah, it makes kind of sense. But for what I do, a lot of individual work and piecework and pushing stories along, it's Kanban. But it just seems like it's not being recognized in that sense.
Yeah, I would say that what I've noticed in the marketplace is that Scrum's been taking on some Kanban properties. So there are other organizations out there training Scrum with Kanban, for example. And what they're doing is basically saying Kanban makes sense with Scrum. And in the Kanban community, we've never said Scrum is horrible or anything like that. But I think some people felt like, well, Scrum is less than, and it's not. The only thing that we've noted is that, and it kind of goes back to the maturity of organizations and how they use their tools, right? It's that Scrum is somehow seen to be only a certain kind of threshold where you have to see success delivered within 2 weeks, for example. You know, there's that, I honestly haven't read the book, but there's twice the work in half the time, that kind of thing, which to me is a little bit of a shame because it's like, well, is that really what you're trying to get done? I mean, time's a factor in this, but are you actually getting the work done in the timeframe that you're really trying to achieve? And so I think what Kanban does, and Kanban has this in its material quite a bit, is it's permission giving. So instead of saying, well, you've got to make things done within a time box, right? It's almost tyrannical how the time box works. We're saying, wait a minute, why don't you just try and get the damn thing done? And then we're going to do it a few more times and then come back and look at the time it took to get that done on average. And that's probably going to be your capability. So instead of trying to make you artificially force yourself into a 2-week time box or something like that, we're saying, let's see how long it really takes to get the work done, and then start to look at what expectations are for getting that work done. Is there a happy marriage between those two? If not, then we probably need to start working on improving how we do the work. So kind of reflecting and improving over time. But a lot of organizations, you know, honestly, Scrum got started way before Kanban did. So Scrum just has that head start of about, I think, at least 10 years on top of Kanban. So that's why you're seeing this happen now, where you're like, wow, Scrum's everywhere. Well, it is. It's really saturated in the marketplace. And I think what Kanban does is kind of provide that alternative to go beyond Scrum. And so we tend to say, like, there's actually a few more options on the table that you're leaving behind if you just stay with Scrum and keep using it. And I'm not saying Scrum couldn't do better, or they couldn't catch up with us someday at some point. They are trying out new things that are Kanban oriented. But if you take away from Scrum what's there and kind of stop limiting yourself in some ways and say, well, let's see where else we can go beyond what Scrum does for us, then you probably would find that you don't have user stories anymore. You probably have real nouns that matter to the customer, that matter to you. And you could generate user stories off of that, maybe if you needed to, for just simply organizational testing purposes, for code purposes. But after that, you kind of start to break away from this sort of framework, and you start to fly a little bit more independently, a little bit more freely. And I think for a lot of organizations, they struggle with budget, they struggle to finance, and then they're like saying, oh, well, now I have to put it into some kind of bucket of operational execution. And they go, well, that's the bucket machine over there, that's that Scrum thing. And I tend to say, well, if you can think a little bit less critical about it and be a little bit more flexible, you'll find that there's actually a way to commit money into a budget and then basically analyze it for throughput. And so it comes back to dollars and cents for managing product or managing services, and how that relates back to the management system, the operational management system for all that money that's coming in. So that's it's a big deal in the long run. And I think a lot of companies are just kind of happy settling with Scrum because it finally fits their budgeting algorithm, and they kind of stop right there. And there's so much more that they leave on the table. So I think kudos to you for recognizing that you have more options on the table and that you need to kind of exercise those options.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sahin. Thank you, Joy, for the wonderful session. Yeah. So I have a typical scenario, because that's what I'm facing in my work at present. We are using Scrum, but the tendency is that in frequent intervals, we are constantly getting changes, which is disrupting the Scrum sprint backlog, and we need to adapt to those emergencies, and these are frequent. So I was thinking if I can switch or move or think about implementing Kanban, but there is a fear for me, because since the organization's changes or those emergencies are frequent, I'm just fearing that the expedite swim lane we will be working on that swim lane only. So how to actually visualize or come up with some solutions or something like that, which would best fit these kind of situation if you have encountered in your past workplaces or experiences? So
great question. Awesome. Damon, one final thing for Damon before I move to your question, because you had mentioned rejecting work, Damon, because it just wouldn't succeed or something like that. And I tend to track all that rejection related behavior as data that tells me we're abandoning work. Why are we abandoning it? Because of time. Or maybe we're abandoning it because it doesn't make sense suddenly. We're confused by it. And that helps to inform you as far as when you say yes to something. So instead of committing to just a random block of stuff, you start to ask questions and really get better at saying, is this something we can really commit to and succeed in delivering? Or is it really just this weird box with a wrapper on it? We don't know if it's a Jell-O mold or if it's really work requirements or something else. It's kind of a surprise, like a jack in the box when you open it up. So food for thought on that commitment piece.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Asim, for your question, it kind of goes back to a little bit of Damon's question too. So what can happen, I've seen this happen in so many cases with organizations who are trying to get their feet on the ground with Kanban. They say, well, here's our Kanban board. We're using Scrum, so we'll just use our Kanban board to do doing done or something close to that. Maybe analysis, development, test, that kind of layout. And then they'll say, well, here's our WIP limit. And they'll put the WIP limit on top. They'll say, we're good, right? And suddenly people start to load work into that system. And then expedites happen. Yes. And you say, well, here's an expedite lane. We'll allow one to happen. Only one at one time. And you start to just operate that way. And suddenly you realize if you allow that gate to be fully open for the expedite, you're going to have one every week or every 2 weeks, right? It's always going to be an expedite there. And of course, the team, if you coach them the right way, they're going to naturally gravitate towards that expedite and say, let's fix it, right? Let's make sure that thing gets resolved. Now, that's where data pays a big benefit to you, right? And you realize over time that maybe the expedite's not the right thing. So when I worked with the Department of Labor, the White House loved the expedite lane. They used it at least 4 or 5 times before the manager caught on, oh, wait a minute, those things are moving faster. All my other stuff that I've committed to for other agencies is going slower. Oh, crap. We've got to change, right? So that kind of feedback on the lead time is really important. And sometimes you want to kind of be paying attention to that a little bit more closely. So that's one way to kind of get that behavior aware and kind of change that behavior over time, where someone who has to say, yes, we're committing to this work, to the customers, starts to say, is it really on fire? Because you're saying it's on fire, but does it really have a business impact? Does it really critically affect the bottom line by 20% like the rest of the planned work? Or is it just not really making a big dent, but it's on fire this week? And we can kind of triage it appropriately. So that's one way to play it out. Now, another technique which I've used early on in low maturity environments, they're just kind of getting their feet on the ground, is to say, let's take our capacity. Let's just say it's 20 things that we're going to keep track of. Cut it in half. We're going to cut it in half to say half of it's dedicated to plan work, half of it's dedicated to stuff we don't even know about until next week. And so we allow for slack to happen in our system, and that slack absorbs some of that chaotic environment. And as that chaotic stuff comes through, if you find that it starts to repeat 3 or 4 or 5 times with that same kind of chaotic stuff, that's no longer chaos. It's no longer expedite. That's actually a work type with a level of performance or expectation tied to it that just hasn't been formalized. And people could be coming to you going, oh my gosh, this is so shocking. You're like, this is the 5th time this has happened in this month. It is not shocking. It's regular work. It's unexpected work. It's unplanned work. But now we can categorize it as a type of work with a class of service, and we can start to capture that and allocate capacity to it. Long term, you might want to destroy that type of work because it's disruptive. But for the short term, the 6 months ahead of you, you probably won't be able to get rid of it.
True. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Business loves the expedite lane, as you said, because they are always focused on top priority, and that makes them happy. And that I'm just fearing that you cleared that out. But for me, it was a fear. If I do that, then it becomes a norm. Everybody wants to put that expedite lane, and then we miss out all the planned items. Yeah, that great input for me, actually. Great right. Learning for me.
Yeah. Thank you, Asim. And one other thing to consider in this is when you get expedites and say it's an expedite, that's really a message of two things. Either the system's not trustworthy that we're working with, the technical system, or I don't trust you to be able to execute in the time frame I need. It's a hidden message. So I would definitely inquire with the person, well, how soon do you need this resolved? Why is it on fire? How do we know that this is really a big issue? What happens if it doesn't get solved this week? So kind of test their belief that this is a problem and actually have them kind of express their expectations for performance, because that's really sometimes what's hidden underneath the expedite message. The expedite message from the White House was, we think we need this by next week. And so we kept juggling with them and eventually realized, wait a minute, you're boxing us around. You're speculating. So a lot of people come to you with the interpretation that they've done their homework and they know this thing's on fire. And then you actually sit down with them and you start to talk with them, or you do the work and you finish it and you realize that was never on fire. They were speculating, but they claimed it was on fire.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where you want to ask more questions of that work. That's a key thing, because if you don't, you'll end up rejecting it like Damon, because you realize this wasn't really what we needed to work on. Or you get it done and you go, whoa, we just wasted a lot of time on this thing. Oh, right. Yeah, so frustrating.
True. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your question, guys. Joy, we are getting to the end of the conversation as the time we have with you. Is there anything that you want to share with us before we close?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a great question. Stay up to date with Kanban University. We actually have a newsletter. So if you go to kanban.university, you'll find our super duper awesome website. And in that website, you'll find a link to join the newsletter. I recommend a lot of people join that nowadays because we're definitely releasing a lot more information, a lot more interesting, fun tools to work with, and good information across the world on what people are doing with Kanban. And in the coming weeks, actually, this is something I forgot to mention, Shaheen, that I can talk about minimally, is that we're about to release the, well, we won't release it immediately, but we're going to release it somewhat soon, the first ever annual State of Kanban. So capturing across the world what people are doing with Kanban and how they're using it. So by signing up for that newsletter, you'll get notified when that comes out. And I can tell you, because I'm 50% of the effort on it right now, it's going to be a fun report. It's going to have a lot of cool insights, and then we'll probably follow up with additional newsletter releases that will share some really neat correlation nuggets from the marketplace and how they're using Kanban.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Joey, for spending some time with us, and I appreciate your time. Hopefully to have a chat with you later on as well.
Yeah, sounds great, Shane. Thank you for having me here.